Welcome to Professional Learning Conversations, connecting you with leading teachers and educators around the world. I'm Sarah Gilmore, and in this episode, Angeline Au and Anne Van Damme are continuing their conversation. If you listen to part one, you'll know that Anne is an extremely experienced educational consultant and teacher who's taught and led internationally and worked extensively with the IB. In this episode, Anne and Angeline are talking about agency in the IB, and we are really lucky to have Anne's input on this, since she played a major role in the recent redevelopment of the IB's release of The Learner as an instalment of the Enhanced PYP, which is launching this year. So Anne really is an expert in student agency in the IB, and we hope you enjoy her insights.
So in December 2017, the PYP released The Learner as one of the first installments of the Enhanced PYP, and you worked with the PYP development team in the regional office in The Hague. From my perspective, it was quite clear to see that the review work you contributed to was largely influenced, I think, by your understanding of student agency, the early years, your thoughts about inquiry, and the aspects of the learning community. As you mentioned earlier, you really value the relationships that you foster in a classroom and in a school in order to promote learning. And I just wanted to ask you about agency, because I think agency is a word at the moment that is all abuzz right now. And the PYP, they wrote in their released document that valuing agency begins by accepting that students are capable learners and natural inquirers. And this takes me back to, as you mentioned before, with the Reggio Emilia approach and our image of the child and of them as, you know, human beings that possess, you know, a strong potential for development and as you know, people who have rights to learn and grow in their relationship with others. I was just wondering if you could share with us, you know, what your thoughts are about, you know, how did the PYP enhancements evolve really, and the reasons behind why agency has been such a highlighted focus in the direction in which it has evolved in.
Sure. Like, I think I'd like to start with really sort of acknowledging that, like, when you work in the IB office with the PYP development team, that you work with a group of really, really clever people, right? And that they never work in isolation either. So throughout that process, we were always, always touching base with other educators across the world that were contributing content and so on, but also inviting groups of people to come into the IB office, travel from all parts of the world to look at the things that we were developing, offer us feedback, and then we taking in that feedback and further developing everything that we were working on, right? So, you know, that value of collaboration is highly visible and present within that PYP development team. So, you know, definitely, you know, like a collaborative effort, right? These enhancements and everything that will come out of the PYP review. So I think when I joined the team in 2015 and the first sort of iterations of The Learner, you know, the PYP development team was already talking about, you know, the things that we want for learners and the things that we want them for themselves. And I think that this is really where the conversations around learner agency started. So I think agency as a highlighted focus within the reviewed or enhanced PYP is, I think, really because we realize that everything kind of starts with what we believe about learners. Everything we say or do goes back to our image of the child, right? So I think this whole construct of agency will really invite individual people, school teams, parents, and so on to deeply consider what is it that we believe about learners. Because I think that that's often sort of overlooked, if that makes sense. You know, although, you know, like even some of the standards and practices kind of talk about this idea of engaging with children as, you know, natural inquirers and thinkers and so on, I'm not sure if many schools have really deeply thought about, you know, what is it that we believe about learners, what are their rights, what are their responsibilities. And I guess more broadly, you know, when you start thinking about this construct of agency, you know, you realize, you know, that it impacts, you know, what we believe about learning. It impacts, you know, there's clear links to be made, of course, with action and international mindedness or global citizenship. It's clearly connected to inquiry-based learning, to assessment, and the way we set up the learning community. So I guess the more we were talking about agency and the more we deepened our own understanding of agency, we started to see just so many links to things that were already part of the framework, which was exciting, right? So the deeper we got into the stuff, you know, the more we started seeing connections with elements of the framework, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it definitely does. And I'm glad that you're making connections to, you know, the existing framework as well, because I think in the previous versions of the curriculum model, we have the learner in the middle still.
Yeah.
But it was this idea that the learner is constructing meaning. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, a lot of schools were then working towards that model and thinking, okay, well, how are we encouraging the learner to construct meaning? But it was never explicitly clear that the learner themselves also has agency in their construction of meaning.
Yes, yeah, and that the group has agency.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but also, you know, kind of thinking more broadly about this idea of engagement, right? Like if we want to engage students cognitively and emotionally, you know, there's also, you know, this idea of engagement, you know, agentic engagement, and the idea that it really has an impact on student attainment and progress and so on. So the more students feel involved, mm-hmm. the more they have the sense that they can make choices, that they have a voice, you know, that they truly have ownership of their learning. We know that this has positive impact on their learning.
I think one of the, I guess one could say, perhaps misconceptions about understanding about agency or when students have ownership of their learning is that the teacher then doesn't really has much less of a role, mm-hmm. and that the child then is able to, you know, go in any direction that they choose, and that learning is kind of a free for all, laissez faire kind of idea. But from what I understand of it, that's not the case.
No, and I think it's always interesting having people start interacting with something that is new. Sometimes you kind of go to an extreme, right? Like sort of, oh, does this mean that? And I always say to people, like, children have agency, and, you know, talk about, you know, the sort of educational but also more sort of philosophical and human right reasons why agency is important. Mm-hmm. But we really need to think about it as degrees of influence. And of course, that means that teachers have degrees of influence too, right? I think what is happening at the moment in many schools is that we're so used to making all the decisions for students all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And that really goes back to, you know, where we're going on field trips, the kind of parties that we organize, the way the room looks, the schedule. You know, we're making so many decisions for students all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So when we start rethinking this and start involving students in decisions that affect them, I think we, you know, we really have a possibility, a very exciting possibility, I would say, to create a learning community where is that set of shares, where is that sense of shared responsibility, you know, where there is that ownership, where everyone owns, you know, decisions that are being made. And that matters, I think. Also, you know, and this is actually something, you know, my own evolving understanding of agency. In the beginning, it was very much about, you know, this sort of sense of your own sense of self-efficacy and identity and influence and human rights and so on. Where now, you know, like I also see very clear connections to a sense of citizenship, you know, which starts, I think, with students having influence in schools, right? If you can influence the things around you and you're not simply undergoing experiences, I think students will be more inclined to be involved in their own communities later on in life. And that's what we want, right? You know, internationally minded people who are involved in the world. So,
yeah. I mean, well, you know, action being an essential element of the PYP. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that You know, so what are the connections then between agency and action? Like, I've had conversations with some PYP coordinators who then think, oh, you know, well, you know, it's obviously related, but how is it the same? How is it different? Well, now we've got these two words and you know, how do I make sense of this?
Well, I think agency is a much broader concept. Hey? If you combine agency and action, if you look at the connections between those two constructs, I think in my mind, agency is much broader. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think agency really is about, you know, the control that you have about educational decisions and other decisions and ideas that resonate within a learning community, and what kind of path am I following in terms of my education? You know, children really being key agents of their own learning. Where I think action really is about that sort of making a difference, right? And impacting things around you. So they're definitely related. And you do have to have a really sort of strong self-sense of, you know, knowing that what you believe matters, right? And what you want to change, you know, that there are people around you that are interested and can support you with that. And I think that that's where, you know, this idea of action comes in. Like, so, but that also means that I think people in schools need to be really open to listening to children's ideas about what they want to do within their community, right? Mm-hmm. I think action is often kind of like tokenistic. Mm-hmm. We're often controlled by adults that decide, you know, what is appropriate or not. You know, so I think we also need to, like, when we start listening to children, and also being willing to give things a try, or ensure that children have opportunities also to fail. You know, that things don't work out. Yeah. You see where I'm getting at? So yes, of course, agency and action are very much interconnected. In a way, if you think about impacting that's what's around you, then action is a specific way of impacting with a particular sort of purpose in mind, right? But yeah, like I think it all goes back again to, you know, are we willing to listen to children's ideas, right? And what do we do with that?
I really connected with what you said about, you know, the agency being such a broader concept. It obviously, the understanding of it and my own understanding of it is constantly evolving. And I think that for me, if learners have more agency of their own learning and their own influence and degree of influence in how and what they're learning about, mm-hmm. I think that that itself is going to have more impact on them inquiring authentically. And if they're inquiring in such a way that is meaningful to them, that, you know, that because we have listened to what they want and how they want to do it, that the actions that then result out of this inquiry will then actually be more meaningful because it's also come from them and not so much like, and so it's also interconnected with all the key elements of the program.
Yeah, and I enjoy listening to what you just said, sort of going, you know, pulling it back to, you know, that whole sort of process of coming to know something, and that within that we're also responding to what children are truly interested in, you know, so that there is also more sort of like authentic action, because it really comes from a place where children deeply, really deeply care about something, rather than that sort of like, oh yeah, this is also something I gotta do.
Because when you think about, you know, what sometimes we have these wonderful units of inquiry, and if we're not clear about the purpose of why we're learning about this, and the purpose is actually really to think about, well, now that we have this new knowledge about a specific topic or a specific, you know, transdisciplinary theme, now that we have this new knowledge, what are we doing about it? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the action comes in. But then if it's very much, like you say, teacher-driven or guided, then it makes it challenging to have then this the action that is going to actually shift the way a learner thinks.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the same can be said for educators, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, we want to have agency over our own professional development.
Yeah,
and sometimes that's not always the case.
Yeah.
And then when that isn't the case, we often, you know, maybe give lip service to what we're learning in a meeting or are sent to something that we're not particularly interested in. And then and in the end, it makes very little difference to what's happening in the classroom.
Yeah, because you want to have that involvement, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you were to define agency in a sentence, what would you say, Anne?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I'd say the power to act.
Oh, great. Yeah. I love it. Simple.
Yeah.
Short is sweet.
Yeah.
And is there actually a synonym for the word agency?
No, I haven't come across it. I think a lot of people talk about it really as voice, choice, and ownership.
Okay. Yeah. I think... Is agency something that is then unique to a specific culture, do you think? Because I think sometimes we often, have these words that encapsulate very well what we want and what we mean, and it involves a lot of unpacking. But that can be hard sometimes in different cultures that may not have that word at all.
Mm-hmm.
To give you an example, in German, there isn't really a word for assessment. So they have evaluation or Prüfung, which means test, but the concept of assessment itself, you know, exists in the English word. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, no, I know, and it's really interesting to think about degrees of agency that people have within particular social cultural contexts, right? Like just in general, and different values that people give to, you know, the individual versus the group and so on. And then on top of that, of course, in perceptions that we have of children, because, we all know that different children have different degrees of influence in different parts of the world. And then on top of that, children are often seen as cute or as mini adults, sometimes as a commodity, sometimes as this child that is out of control, not capable of making decisions, maybe. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot there, I think, that plays into, you know, what we believe about learners or what we believe about degrees of influence that people should have in their lives. So I think it really starts with unpacking that, like from your own perspective and then from a group's perspective within the school context, right? And really deeply thinking about this, because I really do think that teachers are often very used to and very comfortable with making lots of decisions for students. And I think this construct of agency really invites us to maybe rethink the way we are with children.
Mm-hmm. Great. In a PYP blog post on the PYP blog that's monitored by the PYP, you were quoted as saying that ownership is a powerful thing to experience, and that it is coming to know yourself and discovering what interests and excites you. So I was just wondering, what are you currently interested in and/or find exciting in education at the moment?
Yeah. Well, I guess there's always so much to read and so on. So, like, I think the fact that I started talking about the ethics of documentation wasn't a surprise, because it's actually something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, and I've been kind of thinking again about documentation, also kind of preparing for another visit to Reggio Emilia in April this year, which I'm really, really excited about. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that I've been thinking about a lot, you know, sort of on my reading list, is really thinking about developmental psychology. And I think we're still at a place where people kind of take for granted this idea that children go from one stage to another, right? So this is a piece of research, particularly from Piaget, that is still around. Mm-hmm. And although a lot of people have deconstructed and contested this whole idea, right, and that we do know now that children across the world, you know, what they know and can do really depends on individual children, because we're all so different, but also on their context. I still come across so many people who say to me, oh, but that's not developmentally appropriate, or people say, well, they can't think critically yet because they're only three. So, you know, I'm more and more thinking about ways that we can kind of bust that myth and start thinking more critically about children, but also, you know, our ability then to notice what's truly happening in front of us, right? Because we see what we believe, right? Ways of supporting teachers across the world to really deeply engage with children's ability to think critically and creatively.
Okay. Oh, great. Well, that sounds like a really interesting area to explore. And definitely something that I think influences our perspectives on what, going back to a lot of what we talked about today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, before you go, I have a few fun little questions for you. Some of these have been inspired by the Actors Studio series. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, and you know, I just realized that I haven't been prepared those questions. Like, I kind of missed them. You know, like I look at the flows and I thought, okay.
just a few little fun questions. If you could sit next to any educator at like a state dinner, who would it be? And why?
Any educator. I think it would be my friend Fiona Zinn, you know, because I haven't seen her for a while, so that'd be fabulous.
Oh, great. Yeah. So, yeah, I noticed that Fiona is also an early years expert. So, yeah, it's great. You mentioned before the collaboration that you had in the PYP office, and then you were talking about that. And I think it's so important to have peers to collaborate with. And so, yes, Fiona has been one of yours.
Yeah. And she was one of the people that like collaborated a lot with us, you know, on the development of that sort of, you know, key pieces for early years, right? When we started talking about uninterrupted time for play, responsive learning spaces, relationships and symbolic exploration and expression. You know, like it was Fiona who really was one of the key people that was part of the development of those materials, you know, and that content.
Great. And what is your favorite word?
I love words. I love the word protagonist. I think it's a beautiful word, protagonist.
Yeah. Protagonist. Okay. And what sound or noise do you love?
I love the sound of rustling leaves. You know, when I lived in Asia, it was one of the sounds that I really missed, you know, from Europe, you know, that sound. You know, I know that there is in Japanese a word for it, you know, the light that streams through the forest, right? Like, and I wish there was a sound for like the rustling of leaves that sort of sums up the beauty of that. So
yeah,
that's
my
favorite sound.
I guess when you live near the tropics, there's not so much deciduous flora around. Yeah. Now, my final question, Anne, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I think I'd like to be like an artist of some sort. Yeah. Yeah, as I've always kind of had that interest in the arts, so I enjoy photography. So I think that would be something that I would like to pursue if I wasn't, thinking about learning all the time.
so an artist in the sense of the visual art.
Yes, yeah. I think so. Yeah. How about you?
I also lean towards the arts. Yeah. I love it, but more of the musical sort. I would have loved been a singer of some sort.
Yeah.
not that I have the talent or the gift, but in another lifetime.
Yeah, who knows?
So we will have to plan, and maybe if you're ever in Berlin in the near future.
I would love that.
We'll have to go karaoke.
Karaoke. So we can combine good food, good conversations, singing, and so on.
Exactly. And then we'll take wonderful pictures of our evening.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. That sounds like a plan.
Okay, well, thank you very, very much, Anne, for your time. And for speaking with us today with Professional Learning Conversations. And I wish you all the best, and I hope that we can collaborate with you again in the near future.
Anytime. It was a lovely, lovely opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Professional Learning Conversations. You can follow Anne Van Dam on Twitter at AnneVanDam1966. That's Anne with an E and Dam with only one M. To see how we can connect you face-to-face with leading teachers and educators from around the world, check out our website at www.professionallearninginternational.com. My name is Angeline Au, and you can find me on Twitter too, at Ange Au, that's A-N-G-E-A-O-W. I look forward to continuing learning conversations with inspiring educators for you.